All right. How many people know what a price-to-earnings ratio is? P to E. All right. Let's say that you, what's your name? Sharon owns a company, and we want to find out what her price-to-earnings is, so we take market capitalization and divide it by, this board is like rickety. I'm not drunk, I swear. Net profits. Market capitalization, very simply, if your company has 10,000 shares, each selling for $10, your market capitalization is $100,000. Very simple. Share price times number of shares. Net profit, as Catherine would teach me, is gross sales less the cost of doing business. So if we have a company that has a market cap of $300 million and net profits of $10 million, the price to earnings is 30 to 1. Everybody with me? Okay. What that means from the economic standpoint is for every dollar, let's say that I add, make this a 2, what happens to this number? It becomes 60. Now, it's not automatic. Okay, well, what happens is that all the analysts on Wall Street will say the company is undervalued if it has a standard price to earnings of 30 to 1. Enron, by the way, had a pop or price to earnings of 60, which is insane for a company that didn't do anything except launder money, which is what they did. So for every dollar here, you add $30 to your share value. How do Wall Street executives get paid? In stock. So if I were to add a dollar of drug money off the books down here, you're driving the share price up by 30 bucks. Doesn't happen automatically, but they say the company's undervalued. Now, if you do it with Enron, you add a dollar drug money, your share price went up 60 bucks. Do we all know that the Enron executives made $1.1 billion personally trading their stock on insider knowledge? Do we know that Enron, yes, had 3,000 subsidiaries, some 700 of which were in the Cayman Islands? Now, how many oil wells are in the Cayman Islands? There's two ways you can boost this. There's the semi-legal way, which is by selling your profits. If you're the vice president of General Motors for South America, and this lady right here is Pabla, what's your name? Just give me a name. Yeah. Pabla Nancy is the largest drug dealer in South America, and she calls up the vice president of GM and say, I'll pay you $100 million, or that's too much. I'll pay you $5 million for 100 Chevy Suburbans, armor-plated, custom-delivered. You're going to say yes immediately. Now, you'll put that on your books as increased sales, which is one way to boost net profits, but under funny accounting rules, like Philip Morris does, like Enron did, you just take the drug cash and you put it directly into your bottom line without entering any sales on your books, and you boost your net profits knowing that you're turning maybe $10 million of drug cash into $600 million in stock. It's done all the time. I've been writing about this for years, and people are just beginning to get it. Just beginning to get it. So, in that mold, let's look at a couple of funny things. This is a story I broke in From the Wilderness. And I said that I wrote a story that nobody in Congress seemed... I was just in Congress in December. Cynthia McKinney was a wonderful hostess. She opened her offices to me. God bless her. Barbara Lee, God bless her. Representative Ron Paul of Texas. And I should stop and brag for a minute about the Portland video that we have just produced. It's a professionally produced video of the Portland lecture. I flew to Washington. I got exclusive one-on-one eyeball interviews with Cynthia McKinney. And Ron Paul is a conservative, Bible-loving, gun-toting, anti-abortion, conservative guy, but he loves the Constitution. And he said, post 9/11, it's time for a revolution. What's wrong with you people? And I have this interview with him about what's happened to our civil liberties that will make you weep. Okay, but he opened their doors. But I had a face-to-face with Henry Waxman right off the floor. About part of it was about Enron. I said, look, You got to do something. Congress is covering up Enron. One of the reasons why is because the chairman of the SEC, Harvey Pitt, before he became the SEC chairman, was a lawyer in private practice, and his sole client was Arthur Andersen. It gets worse. The head of the GAO, General Accounting Office, David Walker, who took the position in October of 98, was a member of Arthur Andersen's board of directors. He was a managing director while Arthur Andersen was cooking Enron's books. You haven't heard anything about that, have you? You're going to love this. So then I went digging a little bit. I found out that Arthur Andersen has a current contract to audit the FBI. They're auditing all the FBI's intelligence files and their investigative records and their books. Now, how much sense does it make to have the FBI investigating Enron and Arthur Andersen while Arthur Andersen's auditing the FBI? As a matter of fact, Arthur Andersen had contracts with 10 government entities that have lost somewhere around, what, it's now $3 trillion of your money. We'll get to that in a minute. Because we have to teach you the power. How many people here have credit cards? I do this in every city, and somewhere I'm going to find a place where there's people like me. I want you to be honest with this. You get credit card bills every month, right? All right. Please be honest. Please, everybody look up and say, I'm going to tell the truth, okay? On the credit card statement every month, there's two items that are important. One is the total balance on the credit card every month, and the other is minimum payment due, all right? Now, I want an honest answer. What are you most concerned with every month? The total balance owing or the minimum monthly payment? Everybody on the total balance owing, raise your hand. God damn. Everybody who looks first at the minimum monthly payment. Ooh, it's the same everywhere. I'm in trouble. That's how I've been funding From the Wilderness for a while. But if you think about drug cash, Catherine Austin Fitz just did the New York Times drug policy forum with Milton Friedman. The guy wins a Nobel Prize. Milton Friedman, a Nobel Prize for economics. And she's talking about all the drug money. And he says, but Catherine, in a world where the gross domestic or gross world product is like $500 trillion, a measly $500-600 billion in drug money is insignificant. Now let me ask you a question. When you go to put gasoline in your car, when was the last time you tried to pay for gasoline with a bale of hay? When was the last time you tried to pay your bills by going into the company and working for 5 hours? When was the last time you traded goods and services? You need cash to do that, don't you? The drug cash circulating through the world economy is the same as the minimum monthly payment. It's the cash flow that is everything to sustaining Wall Street investment bubbles. You have to get that. So, we move along with Arthur Andersen auditing the FBI and Enron. Now, we know that Enron engaged in what's called pro forma accounting, which means that they basically lie. That's what it is. They hide everything. They form the partnerships to hide the debt, because if they hide the debt, it boosts net profits. And they hide, you know, and they sneak money in, they get bank loans, and they show a bank loan as a net profit, which boosts the stock value, which is what allowed those guys to loot all the shares. By the way, do you know the New York Police and Fire Pension Fund had somewhat $400 million in Enron stock? Okay. Well, let's look at some of the other companies that use the same accounting procedures. Researcher David Podvin did some great work. Pro forma versus GAAP, which stands for Generally Accepted Accounting Practices. But we see General Electric, AOL, Time Warner, Microsoft, Viacom, Disney, IBM, Intel, Cisco Systems, Sun Micro, Tribune, The Washington Post, and The New York Times. And you wonder why they won't tell you the truth about how things are working in this country. Now, we've seen GE a couple of times. Who owns NBC? GE. We bring good things to life. Who owns ABC? Ooh. Now, some of the fun stuff. This country is being looted. You cannot leave tonight unless you get it in your head. The country is being looted. Your money is being looted. We'll get to Social Security later. There's reasons for this. But let's look at how bad it is, first of all. From testimony before Subcommittee on Government Management Information and Technology, March 22nd, HUD IG Susan Gaffney says, we've lost $59 billion. We don't know what happened to it. And under intense questioning by the members of Congress, they said, what did you do? And you know what she said? She said, we made an adjustment in our checkbook. When was the last time you lost $59 billion? Gets worse. Just a short time later, we saw from an absolutely wonderful reporter, Kelly O'Meara, a woman who has served many years heroically on Capitol Hill as a staffer. Now she's a reporter for the Washington Times Insight magazine. Yeah, I know it's owned by the Moonies, but, you know, there are some publications where good reporters write good stories, and Kelly is one of them. She's fearless. Department of Defense cannot account for $1.1 trillion. It's gone. It's gone. It gets worse. From CBS on September 10th, this is from January 29th of this year, the Department of Defense now is missing $2.3 trillion. Now let's put this in perspective for a minute. There's probably a great many anti-war activists here, and you're probably all very upset that President Bush has just asked for a $48 billion increase in next year's defense budget, right? $48 billion is more money than the second largest military, Great Britain, spends on its entire armed forces. Yet the $48 billion increase is only 1.6% of the amount of money that's missing from the Pentagon. Get your perspectives right. Now, you'll shake your head and you'll look at me and you'll say, Mike, the Pentagon budget's only $360 billion a year, or $350, whatever it is now. How can they lose $1.1 trillion? You forget that the Pentagon manages the pensions for 2.4 million military personnel, for 1 point something million civilian personnel. They manage their medical insurance plans. They manage real estate. They manage investments. They have escrowed money for weapons programs on contracts. Did Enron people lose their pensions? Yeah. This money's just gone. People are starting to get wise to this, some of them even in the military. So when I tell you that in January, February of the year 2001, last year, the Taliban, having in the year 2000 produced the largest opium crop in Afghani history, some 44,000 metric tons, destroyed their entire opium crop in 2001. None. Like, you know, maybe 9 tons came out of Afghanistan. They took the equivalent of hundreds of billions of dollars in liquid cash out of the world's banking system. Yeah. All right. The Taliban, Afghanistan was the world's largest producer of the opium poppy. The largest crop ever produced in Afghanistan. And if you want to backtrack and do the history for a moment, because I see a lot of people who seem to want to hear more about this, go back to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in 1979, at a point in time at which 0% of the U.S. opium supply came from Afghanistan, Pakistan. By 1985, according to Professor Alfred McCoy, wrote a fabulous book, one of my heroes, The Politics of Heroin, one of my subscribers. Some 60% of the U.S. heroin supply was coming from Pakistan, Afghanistan. Everywhere the CIA goes on a covert operation, there's drugs. There's usually also oil, and we're going to see that shortly, too. So when the Taliban in 2001, on religious grounds, destroyed their entire opium crop, they knew damn well what they were doing. They were taking cash out of the banking system. Now, what's interesting is that I was in Moscow, Russia, in March of last year, just about a year ago, right now. And I was invited to an economic conference by an agency of the Russian government, and I do what I usually do. It's an old cop detective thing. I started finding the bars where all the spooks hang out. Some people I know do that too. And what I found out was in March of last year that Uzbekistan was awash in a sea of poppies. You'll hear more about Uzbekistan. I also found out that a company called Southern Air Transport, which is like Dracula, it will not die, it keeps surfacing, had opened offices in Tashkent, and so had another CIA, I'll call it a proprietary, Evergreen Airlines, out of McMinnville, Oregon, which is connected to Pacific Harbor Capital. I'm answering your question now. Okay? So they all had offices in Tashkent. And I'm coming back from Moscow going, there's something funny going on. There's something really strange. And I found out that Richard Secord, everybody know who Richard Secord is? Was in Tashkent. All right. Who's that? Do I have to give a free tape to anybody who can say it right? Zbigniew Brzezinski. All right. He was the national security advisor to Jimmy Carter. Well, let me just tell you who he was here. I'll come down here for a second. We'll have some fun. Founding member, remember nothing else, he was the founding member of the Trilateral Commission. Former member of the Board of Directors of the Council on Foreign Relations. All right. Give me the name of the power behind CFR and Trilateral. Thank you. But Zbig, Counselor for Strategic Studies, International Studies, Professor of American Foreign Policy at Johns Hopkins, National Security Advisor to Jimmy Carter, Trustee and Founder of the Trilateral Commission, International Advisor of several major global corporations, Associate of Dr. Henry Kissinger, yes, under Ronald Reagan, Member of the NSC Defense Department Commission on Integrated Long-Term Strategy, under Ronald Reagan, member of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. This guy is everywhere on both parties, which is where you have to go to solve this. If there's anybody in this room who thinks that just by throwing the bushes out, this is all going to go away, go home and take some lithium, buy a straitjacket, and get yourself out of my way, okay? If you want to get really... really, 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 really mad, go out and buy this book. It's called The Grand Chessboard, American Primacy and Its Geostrategic Objectives by Zbigniew Brzezinski, written in 1997, 4 years before the first plane hit the World Trade Center. 4 years. We're going to look at some selected and very fun quotes from this book. First of all, Brzezinski is an academic, which explains why he had to write everything upside down. That's the way he put it in the book, because he thought that it would make better sense to understand that in terms of the world's landmass, Eurasia is, my God, if you look at it that way, it's the largest continent, it's the largest landmass, the largest significant landmass on the planet. And he said, as we move into the end of the age of oil, as we move into a new world order, as we move into the 21st century, as the whole world changes, whoever controls Eurasia will be supreme, primate, primacy in the world. I was watching a C-SPAN thing last night after my Sacramento lecture, and he says, we must not confuse primacy with omnipotence. We have to maintain alliances to keep people managed and so on. But, you know, he says, he talks about in this book, maintaining U.S. primacy. If you read further in the book, he talks about, and I'll do this now in the interest of time,